This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
My name is Rory Brown. I'm the president of the Vancouver Secondary Teachers Association. So I'm an elected person, and I'm a high school teacher. I represent 1,504 members, all secondary teachers in the 18 bricks and mortar schools in secondary schools in Vancouver, and then the one we have also an online VLN school, and then of course a smattering of alternative schools in the city, servicing students from age 13 to 19. And of course, we are a local of the BCTF, so 42,000 teachers strong across our province. And thankfully, in our province, teaching in public schools is a closed shop. So we are all members of the BCTF, and we are a social justice union, so we're very involved in the business of talking about what public education is and what it means to us as individuals and as a profession, and very thankfully so. So a little bit about me. I'm a graduate of the alternative school program process in Prince George, British Columbia. I know. Graduated in 1988, and I probably put my parents through some serious gray hair time to get there. And I think from the start that motivated me to become a teacher, because I did have a teacher who made a great difference. He was a shop teacher. So I became a carpenter and then a shop teacher. So I taught wood shop for many years. But I also, somewhere in there, I got a Bachelor of Education and a Master of Arts in Comparative Philosophy, whatever that is. So that gives me a good foot in each camp, the sort of head, heart, hands, which is the way that I approach my students throughout my career. And I've taught in Vancouver for 17 years, and I've been working in the union full-time for the last four. But we're not here to talk about me, but we're here to talk about, you know, really, having started teaching in 1998, I did 2 years in Churchill, 1 year in Kitsilano, and then the bulk of my time spent at Vancouver Technical Secondary. 1998, as a shop teacher, we had, and as many elective teachers, we had a piece of language in our contract called the Prince of Wales Memorandum of Agreement. And this was class size and composition language, kind of at its finest. It was locally bargained language. So many contracts in the province of teachers' contracts are an amalgam of locally bargained language and provincially bargained language, because a lot of those provisions were in contract before we were actually a provincial federation. And so the Prince of Wales Memorandum of Agreement was really an incredible piece of language, which was stripped ultimately in 2002 by Gordon Campbell and Christy Clark, which dictated in large measure the number of students that were in each class, really down to a very fine detail. So certain students who had certain designations were, to put it bluntly, worth more than other students as a number in a class. So I never, even though my class size provincial, my class size limit in provincial language and local language was 24 as a shop teacher, I would never have a class of more than 18 or 19 in my classes, because some students, because of their designation, or their history or their background, or their involvement with the Ministry of Children and Families, were worth 1.5 or 2. And so I had classes of 18 and 19. And it was really quite a magical thing to begin my teaching career in those classrooms where I had 16, 17, and 18 students. It was incredible, the stuff that I could do. I had students, we made canoes, and we carved paddles, and we took the canoes down to Trout Lake and put them in and paddled across, and that was how I was steeped in that, the ability to do those things with students, which really is the most incredible example of differentiated instruction, which is the basis of what we see this new curriculum being based on, which is, you know, it's such a sad irony, because the new curriculum, having been written by teachers, and, you know, we were active participants in this new curriculum that's coming out right now, it's this it's sort of a mind-blocking dichotomy, because the ability for us to actually do this curriculum, which is being brought out now, is so limited. We see this great sort of block between the ideas in the curriculum and the resources, both time resources and financial resources, to make it possible. I was at a meeting just before I came here, a meeting of my executive, where the teachers from schools all across the city were coming in, and they were reporting, as they started to look at the new draft documents of the 10 to 12 curriculum, how they realized just how incredibly difficult, if not impossible, it will be for them to enact. And we're really getting the sort of first glimpse at what this new curriculum looks like and what it'll feel like for teachers. And I think a member of my executive, who's a very eloquent speaker, who teaches at McGee Secondary, said, you know, he was looking at the new grade 10 English curriculum, and, you know, it's sort of broken into two pieces, and two students get to choose between one piece or the other, and then, you know, obviously they take two parts of the same or one of each and kind of glue them together. And really, he said, there's such a disconnect, because how on earth will this be scheduled into a school where every single English class in his school is absolutely right to the max? You know, if there's a class of 28, then there's another class of 32. If there's a class of 29, then there's another class of 31 right across the board in English classes. And there's no way for the flexibility. And the provincial government is always talking about the flexibility and choice. There's no way for that flexibility and choice to actually be applied pragmatically in the school system. And we're seeing that over and over again. You know, certainly the elementary teachers whose draft curriculum came out a year before us have been living this experience of trying to bring what they see as valuable and what they exactly have written into their practice, and that crazy disconnect. So on the class size and composition issue, you know, I had three and a half really incredible years, and then everything, the wheels totally came off in 2002. And to come back in September of that following year and see just the classes, you know, principals and schools sort of hung on for a year and a half or so with, you know, creative ways of staffing, but really we started to see it decay. And I think the reality that is most sort of poignant this year, today, you know, this week, today in the classroom, two things that I've spoken about at the standing committees before at the school board. One is, you know, I think it's important for everyone who has a grade 11 or 12 student right now to go home immediately and talk to them about how many spare blocks, you know, how many spares do those students have. In even grade 10, we took some data from our members right away early this year, and it's remarkable how many grade 10s, and then more in grade 11, and then even more in grade 12, actually aren't going to school full-time anymore. I know that when I was in grade 12, the only way that you could get a spare block is if you had, you know, a really heavy academic load, and there was only sort of maybe a quarter of the grade 12 population that were sort of eligible for that. But, you know, thinking of what Alex said, that under this per student funding model, it's so destructive, because when the electives in a school, be they academic electives or non-academic electives, when those electives are really, really full and students try to make choices to move around, there's no space for them, so they end up getting another spare block. And under the per student funding model, therefore, that spare block that student carries does not generate funding. So it's a really very quick, vicious circle that defunds the school system. So we hear a parent say, well, I couldn't get, you know, Johnny or Susie into, they couldn't get into this school because it's full. And really what the story behind that is the school is not physically full, but it's full because the school has been staffed already based on the sign-up of last year. So each year that goes by, as those students peel off into not being able to get those courses that they're looking for, then the funding isn't generated, and therefore the staffing for next year is smaller. And, you know, that's an enrollment problem. It's very hard data to get those technical pieces into the public's heads. But I think it's really important to note that the school-age children in high school-age children, particularly in Vancouver and especially in smaller jurisdictions, are not getting the amount of school that they used to have, which is a really serious problem for our members. Certainly, the class size issue for us this year, this was the first year where senior staff and the board moved forward with a proposal to build the school budget whereby the class size at the high school level, class sizes were built purposefully over the limits, the very inadequate limit of 30 students that's in the school act now. And so we do see classes at certain schools. So far, as much as we can tell, that Kitsilano is probably one where the numbers are higher. So there's a number of classes over 30 at Kitsilano. I know that the staff of the school board tried as best as they could after enacting this budget, which was not actually passed, tried to work very hard to keep the number of classes that were actually over 30 down as low as they possibly could. But they do exist out there. And one of the most cynical pieces of legislation that this government passed was what we call in the BCTF is the Cash for Kids scheme. And the Cash for Kids scheme says that if a school board builds a class in a non-exempt category, which is most classes, of over 30, then the teacher is eligible for extra compensation. And we immediately, as a federation, passed a resolution at our AGM in Vancouver a number of years ago. I can't come up with the year out of my head. Passed a resolution that said that teachers won't do that. It's unethical for us to profit from students, and it's absolutely anathema to us to be paid extra money for extra children in our classes. But it puts us in a very difficult place, and what this government is unfortunately very good at is finding ways to take a group that sits in opposition to their view and their vision of a public good and find members of that group to pit against each other. It's very distressing to us to have teachers. And there's the odd teacher that says, well, I want my money. I'm teaching 32 or 33 or 34 classes, and I want my money. But we've decided as a collective that that's not going to happen, and we're going to push back on that. And those are distressing and difficult conversations. And what they really are is they amount to an inefficiency, because what we're doing is we're putting energy into having those little fights with each other or having fights with the government, and where we just absolutely don't need to do that. And I think, you know, when I say misguided flexibility and choice, this agenda of flexibility and choice really doesn't amount to flexibility and choice for the public. It really amounts to just a decrease in public services. The fact that students can transit across the city basically by choice, you know, notwithstanding what Isabella brought up, has been very difficult for schools to navigate the data of which students in Vancouver are going to school where. We know that the in-catchment grade 8 class at McGee, I believe, is somewhere around 30 students, and yet McGee is a school of, I think, 1,100 or so. It's difficult to think about all of those car trips that are going across the city pell-mell. And we as teachers know that there are no great differences between schools in Vancouver. We're staffed in the same way. We're all under the same contract. We all have generally the same training. And it's quite distressing for us. And all that flexibility and choice does nothing except disrupt the system. And that disrupted system is one that, you know, we try our very best as teachers to keep up and to maintain. But I have to tell you quite frankly that it is not the system that I started teaching in 1998. It's not as effective. It's not as educationally sound. And there are dips and valleys, and there are years where, you know, there are great advocates that the Vancouver School Board have been for public education have managed to kind of band-aid and tape and put back together. And we have the odd year in the last 14 that was, you know, a little upswing in quality, and we're trying our best. But certainly there has been a remarkable decay. We have seen the greatest slide this year, for certain. Just the instability, I think Isabella's example of the retimetabling of an entire grade eight and grade nine at Kitsilano. Teachers did their very best, but we had so many calls from teachers from Kitsilano this year saying, I just can't get going. I can't do anything with my students because there's just no room in the school for anything to happen. I don't have enough textbooks. I don't have enough desks. And there was one teacher, actually, because of some of the temporary classrooms there, who actually couldn't fit the students that she was assigned into her room. She had to have four students sitting in a series of chairs that was actually outside the door of her classroom. We fixed that with a phone call. But those are the sorts of things, those are the sorts of choices that teachers are having to make. And we do see, part of our work as a union is we keep track and we monitor and obviously represent the TOCs. And we have a remarkable phenomenon happening now, which is that as fast as the school board can hire TOCs, they leave. They leave Vancouver. They go to other districts or they leave the profession. And, the district tries to maintain a list of TOCs that allows them to replace teachers who are ill or who are on leave. But they have a difficult time. And usually they have a difficult time as the flu season starts to kick in or if there's a really big conference. But we're seeing earlier and earlier and earlier that shortage of teachers. And one of the things we do is the school board asks us to come down and speak to TOCs when they're hired and they're brought on to the system. And we do that regularly. But they're leaving as fast as the school board can hire them. So all that to say, we are very distressed by, I guess that's an understatement. We're very distressed by the recent developments at the board. I think one of the things that we can be very proud of as citizens of Vancouver, and I have three students in the public school system in Vancouver, three children in the public school system in Vancouver. My son goes to Templeton Secondary, and my two little guys go to Hastings Elementary. And one of the things we can be very, very proud of is that, the last two school boards in Vancouver were champions of public education. And the minister and the province like to characterize, bring this debate in as, are they stewards? Are they advocates? Are they, I think what we've seen in Vancouver in the last, for the last two boards has really been an example of what school boards should absolutely be. Folks who listen to the public, to the concerns, who tirelessly go to meetings. I've been to so many evening meetings, and I think, wow, why are we doing this? And then I go to a meeting, and I realize that, the voice of teachers, the voice of parents is listened to, and changes are made, and those debates are really valuable and potent and rich. And what's happened in Vancouver is these brave folks, have protected, to some degree, the destruction that has been happening in the rest of the province. And there were many, many schools closed in Prince George. This school that my sister went to is closed, no longer exists. And I think Gladstone Secondary is a really great example. Gladstone is one of those schools where, you go through cycles with high schools, and they're all really good. But Gladstone is kind of really in a really sweet spot. It's just a gem of a place. And to contemplate throwing Gladstone in four different directions in the city is absolutely crazy. If you walk into that school, just how magical things are really working at Gladstone. The student voice, the teacher voice, the initiatives, and to contemplate the destruction of that kind of a jewel in our city is just so patently irresponsible and destructive. And we're very worried about what's on the horizon. The statements that certainly this new superintendent made when he was working in North Vancouver are very distressing. Obviously, the process of how our super trustee came to be gives us no faith in the idea of democracy and the idea of local voice. So we're worried as teachers. We're very worried. We feel like we've lost our voice. We've lost our champions, and we're hanging on. We're going to do the best we absolutely possibly can. But there's a lot of questions that need to be answered, and there's a lot of people in Vancouver who need to become involved. We hear from them, but that first board meeting on the 21st of November that's scheduled, that there needs to be a show of the citizens of Vancouver coming back, asking questions, and holding the folks who are there now to account.